This is the Real Footy Podcast. Coming up, we discuss the big issues of the season and none bigger than the virus that threatens to infect an AFL season. We look at which teams are best placed for the year ahead, who is likely to slip down the ladder, the coaches under the most pressure, and the teams that are set to rise. Plus, we have a new special guest joining the panel who will give us an insight into all things AFLW and much more.
Oh, mark of the year in pre-season from Sydney Stack. He needed the Stack hat on the way down.
Try to take that kick through the middle. Casbolt was onto it once and twice. Oh, and Eddie Betts is going to kick the first goal. Back as a blue, back at Princes Park. Those baggy shorts.
Hello, my name is Michael Gleeson and welcome to the Real Footy Podcast. But before we get started, I'd first of all like to apologise for the lower quality audio that you'll be hearing for the first few minutes of the show today. In order to bring you the absolute latest, we've had to dial in on the fly from home, from quarantine, from bunkers. But don't worry, in a few minutes' time, you'll be listening to the rest of our season preview episode recorded in our usual studio. But for now, we're trying to bring you the latest up to the minute as to what has been going on. And for that, I'm joined by Peter Ryan. In what is a rapidly developing and very fluid coronavirus situation for how it relates to the AFL in our small little bubble world of the AFL. Pete, what can you tell us?
Well, the first thing to note is that the coaches and football managers are all in a hookup with the AFL at the moment on Monday morning as we speak. But the latest significant development is that Collingwood's confirmed that Scott Pendlebury has been isolated from the group, the Collingwood captain displaying flu-like symptoms. So that's a pretty significant development because we're all obviously on tenterhooks in relation to the games proceeding if a player does actually either contract coronavirus or is forced to self-isolate and is unavailable for the games.
Yeah, and as my understanding is, as it is right now, hasn't been a positive result for him, but he has flu-like symptoms.
Scott Penn will be taking a cautious approach. The club, the Magpies AFL team, still training as one. They all got together this morning and trained, and they're still preparing for Friday night's game, which probably moves us to the point where the AFL's still planning to play the footy.
You're correct. As it is of Monday lunchtime, they're meeting the footy managers this morning. They're meeting the CEOs and keeping the presidents in contact, and they're speaking with all of the players this afternoon. The latest advice was that they still intend to play. But just check your watch because at any given moment that situation can change.
The point to make is Pendlebury hasn't been tested positive, so no player has tested positive as yet. We're just waiting for that potentially to happen, but he's self-isolating. The other thing, Mick, as you're about to say, is that the plans are to play round one with no crowds and then to move into a fixture where we have shorter breaks and amended rules to actually allow games to be played.
Yeah, and look, this is, as we stress, and people will be aware anyway, is a fluid situation because today on Monday, the Victorian state government also announced the state of emergency. So any decision that the AFL is seeking to take may be taken out of their hands anyway by the state government at any point in the next few days. So at the moment, we have the VFL, their season has been suspended until later notice. The amateurs are deciding what they do. We've got it in the English situation. The Premier League's been suspended. In the US, they've banned gatherings of 50 or more people. So it would seem that it is an inevitability that there will be games cancelled. And this is, even for the AFL, privately acknowledging this has been a significant shift from certainly even a few days to a week ago, where they had previously been, you know, expecting that, crowds maybe, but the games will go ahead.
I think the other thing is Cameron Smith mentioned after an NRL game yesterday that he'd like to see the NRL suspended, and I think with all these things happening at such a fast rate, there is a growing public sentiment for the AFL to take a similar tack and potentially cancel the games and take a bit of a deep breath. We're all into that social distancing process at the moment. So, look, the decision I reckon that the AFL is going to be making with the club CEOs, coaches and footy managers is do we actually proceed or do we stop?
Yeah, and look, there's a whole range of things that will flow from that, not to put the cart before the horse, but obviously how do they make the first intent will be to make up those games if they are forced to abandon games, or whether it's individual games, or whether it's, you would think if one game goes, it's a whole round that goes, how many rounds they lose in the short term, how do they make those up later in the year? How many, how do they find windows? First of all, it'll be push the season back a week or two into October. The buys will go, they'll play within those. There's provision to try and have shorter games and condense them into a shorter period. But in the event that they did lose entire rounds, then you have a whole extra component of the broadcast rights agreement was based on nine games per round. That would therefore require a renegotiation of the broadcast deal and potentially money going out of the game. So there's a whole heap of other financial considerations, which we don't need to get into now, but around membership and ticketing. Clearly, there'll be refunds for tickets sold that you can't attend, but then more broadly, the financial impact on clubs with and the access to the future fund, which will obviously have to come into play.
So there's a meeting tonight, which is an important one, a hookup of all AFL players with the Players Association discussing the round, which is upcoming. There's some nervousness among players, but my information is that the players won't be suggesting that they don't play because they're obviously their pay is dependent on games going ahead, and they'd prefer the AFL to call off games so that they're guaranteed money rather than pulling out and refusing to play. So that'll be a very interesting meeting. There's also CEOs just desperate to get membership packages and so on in place that they can actually save that money for this year.
It is a moving feast. I personally don't think that it will be down to the players being the ones to decide to pull the game. I think the AFL will, in collaboration, you know, get the temperature, for want of a better term, of the room and make their decision. But look, that is, as we say, constantly evolving. So for all the latest information, go to realfooty.com.au and we'll keep you updated on the latest developments. But for now, we will return to the regular Real Footy podcast and preview all of the season ahead and look at the AFLW so far this year.
Get access to every episode as it drops. Hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history.
Welcome back, Caroline Wilson, Jake Please. Niall, Chief Football Writer, and coming in for a Real Footy podcast debut, North Melbourne star and AFLW Best and Fairest winner, Emma Carney. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to it.
The second biggest news after coronavirus, perhaps for the season, was the off-season, was the Alex Rance retirement as the resident Tiger. Caro, what does this do to your window?
Oh, well, I'd be interested to hear what Emma thinks as the resident footy expert. But look, the Alex Rance retirement was a massive story, and obviously the fallout was massive.
Well, we start, and don't forget though, we start from a premise that he has an unusual faith in as a Jehovah's Witness, and he had a marriage breakup. Now, there are two things that that, depending on who you talk to, where there's some suggestions about that those things have had an influence on his decision.
I walked into a seaside supermarket the other day, and there's a full length Alex Rance promoting some new form of vitamins, and obviously he's got his books, so he's doing other things. He's looking for other sources of income. As to how it will affect Richmond this year, well, just because they won a flag last year without him doesn't mean he's not a very big loss this year. Emma, do you think that it will be less likely for you to tip Richmond to win the flag because of what he did?
Look, he's a great player, but I think the culture that Richmond have been able to establish over the last couple of seasons, I think they'll be able to cover him. They've got a really good defensive system. Dylan Grimes is still, I think, is a very underrated defender. But even their midfielders in a Lambert and a Cochin, they're both very defensive minded. So that actually helps with their defensive system that they have in place.
What about you, Gleese?
I think that they can certainly cover him because they have covered him and they won a flag without him. I think that in some ways they'd already moved on. And I think that's the message that's coming out of Richmond right now when you're talking about Benny Garsong. He will not come back. That's because their mentality is, we've gone past that. We've closed the door on that. We can't have the season hijacked by talking about Alex Rance.
No, but we haven't all sat down in this room.
No, for I know, quite I know.
There was a period of absolute shock.
Yeah.
There was.
My understanding is he went to them in July last year and was going to pull the pin then and wanted to and was planning to. I'd written a piece for this and
I actually went and door knocked the Jehovah's to get our own back. But
did they let you in?
Very hard to door knock.
Sorry,
ironically, you can't door knock the Jehovah's. They've got security gates up. But I sat with the Jehovah's and spoke and discussed with them. And they said, no, there's nothing that we say specifically about why he would retire. So it's a personal decision that is left for him.
I know that he has made noises to do this before and recently, but I think it was a bit the boy who cried wolf. I think they just couldn't understand that you would walk away from such an unbelievable job.
Just quickly, he took the settlement was very favourable to Richmond too.
Yep.
Like he's accepted 1/6. So he's turned his back on about $600,000. I think I calculate it's close to $1.5 million over 2 years.
But would they
people
have got,
just don't do this.
Would they have traded away Brandon Ellis had they known?
I think they would have, yes. I've asked that question and the answer is almost certainly they would have, but they may have been able to get another player, Caro.
The other club's assumption is that this opens up a big window for them financially, which could be a fillip for them when you're talking about what does it mean for them, for Rance, not playing, but in future seasons. That's based on the assumption that, you know, his money comes out, therefore they can pay someone else. But that's also based on the assumption that they weren't already over the cap for next year, if they, you know.
So Collingwood have salary cap issues, obviously. They made the decision that they had to keep Brodie Grundy, whatever it was going to cost. And it was a massive deal that he ended up getting, certainly in terms of tenure, 7 years.
7 years.
Dane Beams is just going to continue to haunt them, though, isn't he? Financially?
Yeah. Yeah, he will. He'll be an issue that'll be managed during the year. He won't play again, but it'll be an issue of when they come to a settlement with him in collaboration with the AFL.
Bearing in mind, he has no incentive to reach a settlement. He could drag it out. I mean, there's no...
No, but there's a messiness around that.
That's right. It's in Collingwood's interest to settle as soon as they can. It's not in Dame Bean's interest necessarily to do that.
So why is Collingwood saying we're just looking after him? This can take time. What's he got, 2 more years?
Well, I think
on $400,000 a year or something like that.
I think his mental health issues. They're, you know, without getting into, you know, too deeply into this, I think that they're taking that very, very seriously, and I think that they, they're also aware of the optics of that.
And the car accident, sort of put everything on hold as to what was happening next with contract and with him, and they're just. The contract at the moment, the discussion around his future and payments and that sort of thing has just been shelved for the time being to just let him get better.
So the brutal reality is, Emma, they have to re-sign or somehow find room for Jordan to go in. There are ongoing contractual issues. But as this issue of mental health being an injury it's so complex, isn't it? And it's going to need the AFL's help. I mean, does this come up in your conversations with your Players Association delegates about how we do the right thing by the player but also by the clubs?
Yeah, it's mental health. It's a societal issue at the moment. We're seeing more and more cases of people having to deal with mental health issues. So it's a really sensitive topic. The Players Association is trying to put the best interest to the players first. So it's a hard one. We as players want to be looked after by both AFL and our association. So look, it is a really difficult one, the Dane Beam issue, and hopefully, just for him personally, that he can get the help that he needs and wants.
Okay, Emma, what about 7 years for a ruckman?
Are
you a big fan of rucks?
I am as a midfielder. you want the best rucks around you. 7 years. It is a big deal. He's no doubt the best ruck in the game at the moment. But 7 years' time, when he's what is he now? What age is he?
25.
26. So you're looking at Buddy Franklin and the 9-year deal that he had with Sydney.
Yeah, like, he's a little bit young, but it's still.
Yeah, he is.
Well, the deal is very similar to Tom Lynch's deal, and he has the same management. And that Tom Lynch's deal is more backloaded. So Tom Lynch is getting $500,000 the first 3 years, and then he's getting about $5 million the next 4 years. Brodie Grundy's contract, I believe, is a bit backloaded, but it averages out, comfortable over $900,000, I believe, but less than $1 million.
Yeah,
now,
less than
cut a long story short, he took less money to get 7 years. If he'd gone,
I think it's a fantastic deal
for him or for Collingwood.
Both. I think it's win-win. They made that. I mean, I'm not inside Collingwood, but their people inside the club said to me, "We cannot let him go." He is so important to this club's culture, to the game plan, to it's not just on field, but obviously mainly on field. So once you make that decision, I think the longer term deal in this case with a guy of his character is the right way to go.
Well, it's interesting at the Giants.
Will he be captain, the next captain?
Oh, I don't think so.
Who will be the next captain?
Well, it seems to be Taylor Adams seems to be the favourite, but
okay,
it may it's move.
It's
just interesting that the number of 6, 7, 8 year deals that are now in the system. And
which the AFL hate.
Well, the Giants have led the way in this. I mean, they've got how many players? Whitfield, I think he got 6 or 7. You know,
Cornelio.
Josh Kelly, if he signs this deal that he's agreed to, if he enacts it and doesn't go to free agency, he's looking at an 8 year deal.
Okay, how many years would you give Jeremy Cameron, Emma? Out of contract at the end of the year, free agent at the end of the year?
Hey? He's 27 or 8.
Possibly the best forward in the game.
Oh.
Yeah, possibly. I'd probably I'd argue
he's
that.
He's in the top five.
There's probably a lot to go under the bridge, but maybe 3-4 year deal for him.
Gets hard though, because another team is going to come, Geelong or a Collingwood is going to come to Jeremy Cameron and say, "We'll give you 7 years."
From my understanding, he really enjoys playing his football in Sydney though. I think he likes not being in the limelight and living there and not getting recognised. So you might have a different perspective.
Emma, that's spot on. He I don't think he wants to leave. And look, he is top five. I was just being facetious before. I don't think he's the best forward in the game, but he's certainly top five.
Though? Yeah.
Lynch?
Tom Lynch is pretty good.
Yeah.
And, you know, there would have been times in the last few years I'd also say Jack Riewoldt. I'm not just being Richmond centric.
I would have said Josh Kennedy until 2 years ago.
Well, yeah. Buddy until 2 years ago.
The teammates have said to the club, we've got to keep him. I mean, they've had several deputations over the last 5 years about Jeremy Cameron with the previous contract in this one. They desperately they rate him so highly. He'll stay. I don't think it'll be 7 years, though.
Jake, should Essendon have traded Joe Danaher?
Looking at it now, I would probably say yes. I didn't think that at the time necessarily. I think that Sydney's reluctance, though, was a underrated part of this whole story. That Sydney, Joe Danaher, let's be very clear on this. Joe Danaher approached the Swans, not the Swans approaching Joe Danaher. So it was initiated by Joe Danaher. The Swans, most clubs end up committing to a player in this day and age, a gun player, and they, Swans were conditional in their interest. So as I've written, if I was Joe Danaher, I'd go to Brisbane if I'm going to leave. I wouldn't be going to Sydney. I think Sydney are too far off.
The last thing Sydney need, actually, I mean, they need more midfielders.
Yep.
They don't need, I mean, okay, you'd take him if the going rate was reasonable, but it wasn't.
Yeah, I think that Sydney was saying, yeah, we'll have you, but we'll have you in 12 months' time when you're a free agent and we don't have to give up Tom Papley and we've got the salary cap capacity to do it and we're in a better window. But they weren't prepared to sell the farm for him.
Are we going to talk about Essendon a bit later? Essendon are fascinating to me.
Well, we could go either way. Think Joe Danaher was
could
one
go
of the
horribly
big
wrong.
Off-season.
Yeah, could be.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, we will come to them, as you said, Caro. So we'll take a break there. Coming back with on-field predictions.
You're listening to the Age Real Footy Podcast.
The handball was good. Gleeson on the overflow, waiting for it. Stringer! Didn't mark, didn't matter. Did not matter at all. Stringer suckers another.
Welcome back. We'll dive straight back into the Bombers. What do you think of how they'll go this year, Emma?
I think they'll struggle. I think culturally they haven't got the right setup both on and off the field. They've had a lot of injuries. So what's going on with their fitness staff, first and foremost? But also leadership. I don't see a lot of leadership in there. Dyson Heppel is obviously their obvious one as captain, but I don't see him as, you know, a Trent Cotchin, you know, even Stephen Cornelio coming in as the Giants captain.
And did you make something of their leadership group changes over the summer where Zach Merritt was voted out and then some of the young guys, he had been vice captain and
did Orazio put his hand up then say he didn't want to be in the leadership group? Have I got that right?
I think so, but also they have this voting system where they vote on about five different categories. And in one of the categories, Orazio was 10, like the highest you can get, and another very low. So
they changed how they voted. They recognised also that Michael Hurley, you know, that there was...
It was a big blue leaving him out last year. There was a big blue leaving
him out. He's a very big figure in that football club locker room, and that was a mistake. And probably Hooker, although Hooker's not gone back into the leadership group.
But you feel there is that leadership vacuum there or difficulty with the leadership there?
Yeah, I think so. But also just their game style, their coaching. It'll be interesting with this new restructure. Yeah. I feel like the most successful teams at the moment are those coaches that have those really good relationships, can be vulnerable, have a bit of a personality. To me, John Worsfold, and I don't know him as a person, but he doesn't seem to be that character that can really galvanise the group and, you know, have a bit of a laugh and make it less serious. Yeah.
They want more. They want more, the players. And that was a recognition from the footy and off-field, all the off-field bosses.
The board too.
Look, let's face it, they were going to move Worsfold on. That was absolutely on the cards.
Yep, right through until a certain point in the season.
Yep, they looked at bringing in Alan Richardson as a bit of a senior mentor to the younger Ben Rutten. In the end, they hedged their bets, and they've got, you know, and when that, I sort of applauded it. I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that to give Rutten another year. They obviously think he's the man. In the end, it does smack of a bit of a compromise. Everyone's saying
it's like a soft sacking, Caro, is it?
Yeah. Everyone's saying it's been fantastic and, oh, it's completely a soft sacking. It's like Mick Malthouse. But they've also brought in Blake Carosella, and everyone's saying that it's freed up Worsfold and he's been unbelievable and it's been fantastic in the off-season. But I'm not so convinced. And even the CEO, he was gone. He was out of that football club. And then somehow the board convinced him to stay. They said, no, you've got to see this through, but what's that going to mean by the end of the year? Why is the president actually stepping down? I can't get a proper explanation about that. I think there are a lot of question marks on the Bombers.
Yeah, and injuries on
top. They are, though, like Melbourne. They're a team where their range, I'd be interested in Emma's views on this. I think they've got a fairly big range of potential outcomes because when they play well, when it clicks and they start taking the game on with all those fast players from halfback and everything, they can look absolutely dynamite.
Absolutely, they can look dynamite. But is that enough to win finals footy?
No.
There's your answer.
No. And I think there's a view around the competition, just to back up what you said, that they're not the hardest team to play against. So you play Hawthorn. Hawthorn are not that super talented. But Hawthorn, if you don't play well, they beat you.
But that's also the caveat on this. To the extent that it is still John Worsfold's team, or is it now Ben Rutten's team? And so we haven't had enough exposure
it's Ben
yet.
Ben Rutten's game plan.
Well, we haven't had enough exposure yet to how they're going to go with that game plan. I mean, yes.
Year wasted? Is it just a year of compromise? That's where
we'll only know
you
with
sort
the
of,
results.
Yep. Yep. I mean, when Simon Goodwin finally took over at Melbourne, he just threw out so much stuff in the first 2 years. And as it turned out, he threw out too much stuff. And, you know, I think really insulted the old regime by the way they just ignored the defensive stuff leading into last season. So you just wonder what it's going to mean for Essendon. Anyway.
Caro, your favourite coach, Kenny Hinckley. Will he be coaching next year?
I'm backing Ken. But whether he is still at Port Adelaide as senior coach is the question.
What did you think of David Koch? I mean, I spoke to him and he just straight out said, I mean, you know, if we don't make the eight, you know, pretty much he's gone.
Somebody said to me, Jake, remember I sort of went with the story last year that Ken actually had a caveat on his contract. And if he didn't make finals in the last 2 years, he was out by the end of this year. Now, there's a reason someone at Port told me that. You know, there's a reason that's the way things happen. The getting rid of the CEO, he's going at the end of the year. Ken Hinckley certainly has backed himself in. I mean, he said we can win the flag, hasn't he? He's been really bullish.
He's talked it right up. And good on him.
Best thing about Port is he doesn't seem to be, and I'm not, you know, I am a Ken Hinckley admirer, but they've drafted again with more good kids, and it seems like they've signed up the big three from last year already.
Yeah.
They've all committed.
They've got one big decision this year, though. They've got a big decision, though, Caro. Ollie Wines. I think is a, you know.
Oh, I think Ollie's shuffling off to
somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean.
It just hasn't, from captaincy, it's been a sort of bit of a fall, hasn't it?
So the family, weren't they? The family have been putting around a bit of stuff late last year that maybe Ollie wanted to leave or Ollie wasn't happy or, And I think that I think it's built up a bit of a bad taste in everyone's mouth, and I think maybe he should leave.
Well, we'll see how things go with the season, but it's not looking good for him. He's come off with a elbow injury in the preseason too,
shoulder. And he had this water skiing accident. Now, I asked them about this, David Koch, about this, and said, was that an issue with the captaincy? And he said, absolutely not. But, you know, I don't know. Would you want to be going – would you go water skiing?
I wouldn't. I've never been water skiing before, so I'd probably – do a lot more injuries than Ollie Wines. But he grew up in Echuca, so he's done it since he's a kid. Players have got to live their lives outside of football. I know they're on big contracts. Injuries are going to happen, though.
Yeah, he'd just been made captain, Emma. Yeah. And water skiing is obviously, I mean, players got into trouble 10 years. I remember at Richmond, one of the Kellaway brothers went surfing. And I can't remember what the actual injury was. It was leg-related. And he was out for 4 weeks. And
Dangerfield surfs. He seems to go all right.
There's a lot of surfers. I think surfing they consider sort of lower injury risk, and it's actually good for your fitness and health. I'm not sure things like downhill skiing and water
I'm not sure his teammates were thrilled about
kickboxing.
The
you might want to give that one a miss.
Jake, what's going to happen to the Teague train?
Well, there's enormous challenges to David Teague. I think he did a good job at the end of last year, but he got a lot of the result he got was by senior players. Being he did some very obvious things, moving Mark Murphy and also Ed Curnow back into the midfield. And some of the games they won, such as the game against Fremantle over in Perth, they got enormous contributions from those older players, Matthew Cruiser. So Carlton is still a fair way off. Their talent has improved, but I think he's been dealt an enormous blow with Charlie Curnow. And in particular,
again.
That is actually a bit of a disaster. And they're going to take on Richmond. Again. They're going to take on a rampant Richmond in round one with Richmond. Mm-hmm. I don't know what Greg Hickey and the medical staff and the conditioners do down there, but they do something very, very...
What are you trying to suggest, Jake?
They do it very, very well because they've got not a single speaker. They've got not a single injury on their list right now. Obviously, no rest.
Last year was a disaster in the first half of the year, though.
But they got them all back. That shows you how good those people are in those conditioning roles. They got them all back apart from Rance. So... Carlton, no McKay, Marchbank, who just doesn't play, does he? Yeah. So Teague has got a lot of challenges because this list is still in transition. What do you think, Emma?
I think they'll be better than last year, but I still think they will struggle to make finals.
What's the pass mark for them?
How many wins do they have last year?
They won 7.
So I think if they can probably have 10 wins, it's probably a pass mark.
So of all the caretakers... Who are you the most bullish about? Emma, you first. So there's Brett Ratton, there's obviously Reece Shaw, and there's David Teague. They'd be the three. I mean,
there's really only one answer for you in this as a North Melbourne person.
Look, you know, being at the club, I've seen the impact that Reece Shaw has had on the players. They absolutely adore him. He's probably polar opposites to Brad Scott in the way he interacts with the players. He's really strong on building relationships with them, and I think that'll then translate on the footy field as well.
I'm pretty bullish about Brett Ratton.
Yeah, so am I.
Not only that, Caro, but let's both, or even Gleese too, I'm kind of barracking for Brett Ratton. I can't think of a person in the game as a person that I want to see succeed more. Just there's a little bit of an... I think those of us who know Brett, as you do well and you, Gleese, there's a little bit of an emotional thing about this for a lot of people.
They can't not be.
No, but also he is...
So stiff to get the sack from Carlton, really, when you look back. Yeah.
I know. I spoke to Ross Lyon about it, and he said that he'll be a much better coach the second time round. And there are signs with how they're playing, Emma. Their game style is, you know, something.
Yeah, and just speaking to some of the girls that play at the St Kilda in the AFLW, they love Rats. He has a lot to do with their program as well. So it's probably just testament to the person that he is. And as I've mentioned before, when you've got coaches that build those relationships with players and, you know, really buy into the program, it goes a long way.
I was a bit dubious about some of their recruiting. A volume of players came in, the best of which was Hill. We still haven't seen much of Hanbury, Jake.
No.
Do you expect much out of him? The others coming in, look, Bruce goes out. I think that was a really big out for them.
Well, I think the Bulldogs did brilliantly with yep. with Josh Bruce and with Alex Keith, for that matter. Zach Jones, I think, will do pretty well. I think he's a pretty good player.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about
Dougal Howard.
Paddy Ryder is really just a backup. I don't see. They've got a great young ruckman, so they don't really. Paddy Ryder's just. I don't think he's all that important to what happens at St Kilda. Whereas, obviously, Brad Hill is just enormously important. He'll be close to their best player, so that will make a difference. But the biggest recruit, let's face it, that they've got is Max King, and he is already being among the St Kilda faithful. There's already a sense that, you know, he's got the number 12 of Nick Riewoldt, and the expectations on him. He is a prodigious talent, Caro.
A one-dimensional prodigious talent at this stage, though. I mean, I'm you know, and these kids take a while to mature, particularly in that position.
I disagree with that. He did things the other day in the practice match where he took a mark coming in from the side over the top of the pack. He then crumbed a goal front and centre, took it off his toes and snapped a goal. I think that he's got pace. As long as his knee doesn't go again and his body holds together, he's untapped. So quick fire questions. Which team are you most excited about for the season?
Oh, I think the Bulldogs. The Bulldogs. I mean, I know there's a lot of hype around them, but I like the way they've recruited, as Jake said, and that they've clearly reset. They made a lot of mistakes after the flag. But
Caro beat me to it. Absolutely, the Bulldogs. I've got them in the top four.
I'm going to go something different. I'm going to go Fremantle under John Longmuir. Sorry.
Justin.
Merge two coaches.
Yeah, I have.
You're not the first person to make that mistake.
Just a little bit more attacking game style than Ross Lyon.
I'm going to go completely the other end of the spectrum and offer one that no one else will offer and say the Gold Coast.
Because I want to see the two
top two picks and then Isaac Rankin as well in the first round. That's three guys in the top three that will debut. They won't make a big difference to where they finish on the ladder this year, but seeing the depth of that talent, the amount of elite talent coming to one team at once.
And one player. I'm going to single out one. Matthew Rowell. Oh. People are talking about him. I've heard, and Gleeson, you've probably heard this, Caro, you were up there recently.
I was up there last week. Did they not say
that training of senior players has been lifted by Matthew Rowell as a first-year player hasn't played a game?
Yes. I'm not being Richmond-centric here. They're very praiseworthy of what Brandon Ellis has brought to the group in an off-field sense in terms of training standards. But they're just so excited by Matt Rowell. And he's got his mate who... Rowan Anderson, is it?
Noah Anderson.
Who
Dean Anderson's son.
Yeah, who does all the talking. And he's pretty impressive
as
well.
The last player that I remember hearing that about, like Rowell, about training and first-year player having that impact was Nick Riewoldt going into St Kilda. But the other one, I'm as excited by Rankin. Having seen him as the junior that they never had a go last year, he is the player that will turn game. He would have been the difference between two or three wins last year. He will step into the game seamlessly. Which team is best placed to win the flag?
GWS, in my view. I think they've got the best list. They've got the motivation. I think will be enormous. This is a team that's been knocking on the door of a premiership now for 4 years, a bit like North Melbourne in the 90s when they built up. The other point about them, Gleese, Caro, Emma, is that they have fewer players with downside. So when you look at their list, you don't see many players. If you look at West Coast, you've got Hearn and Kennedy who are well over 30. Richmond even, they've got great players like Edwards and Riewoldt who are over 30, and Cochin, he'll turn 30 soon. The Giants have very few players that are significant. Phil Davis would be one of the only ones.
But they've got to get on the park, and that's always been the issue
at that club.
They still have a capacity to keep picking up injuries, and Taranto's injured again now, shoulder, missed half the season. Who's your tip, Caro?
Richmond. I mean, I just think that there were so many good players who didn't even make it into that premiership team at the end of the season, who showed so much excitement last year. And I'm talking about guys like Stack and Higgins, and I just feel that they're on a mission. They were on a mission last year, and they seem to still be on that mission.
Does the fact that they're coming off winning one almost historically and statistically suggest that makes it even
Look, if GWS were based in Melbourne and played their home games at the MCG, I would say GWS. But for the they're not, and I'm saying Richmond.
Emma?
I'm saying the Giants. I've heard some great things about Steve Canelio's leadership down there since being captain, so I'm tipping them.
A leading question. Do you think that winning that game against Collingwood in the preliminary final and winning that game at the Gabba, even though they were very close and a little bit chancy wins, will have a big bearing on their ability to win a grand final. Because I do believe that. I think that win against Collingwood in particular was
that was their grand final, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And they've got a pretty impressive spiritual leader in Toby Green, who Stephen Cornelio, you know, has led an impassioned defence of the other night at a dinner I was at. And I see it's been reported in The Age this week. I mean, the way he lifts that team and the love they have for him is extraordinary.
We're all just going to forget they were embarrassed on grand final day and are going to carry the scars of that for the whole season and won't be able to answer any of those questions until they come to grand final day again, and they're going to be haunted by that going into the grand final. You can't ignore that.
I think they were wrecked before they were balanced.
Okay, well, for me, it's West Coast. Home games. Tim Kelly comes in. Nick Nat comes back. They're going to hurt for kicking goals with Kennedy being a bit older and Willie Rioli not being there. But for me, West Coast is right there. We'll take a break. Coming back, we'll have a look at the AFLW season.
Do you have a question or comment for the team? Send us an email, realfootypod@theage.com.au.
This does not look good at all. This is disastrous. She's actually screaming out in pain here. Oh, no. Dear oh me.
Yep. And grab for the knee.
Joey, we saw one last week on Friday night.
We've seen too many.
Yeah.
Fair this year.
Welcome back. Well, Emma, it's on bended knee. The injury crisis, you wrote a compelling column about it. It's the issue that won't go away within the AFLW in particular with the high incidence of knee injuries. What do you make of how it's happened this year?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's so much research going into it. But from a player's perspective, the pre-season length, for us, we've only got 8 to 9 weeks in pre-season as opposed to the guys who are, 5 months pre-season. So our coaching staff, our fitness staff have to prioritise what they need to get us in tip-top condition. And for the coaching staff, they're battling, they want the skills to be better. As players, we want the skills to be better. And so that doesn't allow us enough time to physically prepare ourselves to prevent injuries. And now all that preparation is only to prevent injuries, but we've got to take into consideration we're going into games fatigued because we all work or study full time. We don't get to recover as well as the men because, you know, on a Monday we go back to work as opposed to having the day off to go get a massage, to do all the ice baths, things like that.
Do you think the players... people looking at the game saying you could get an ACL in a short season, you could get concussed, people have other jobs. Why would I play this for not more money than we're getting? That's one thing I think is when people have an argument about pay, the injury that people get in the AFLW has to be part of that.
It probably would be that a discussion point for those that are coming from different sports. But for us who play the game, we play it because we love it. We don't get paid big bucks. So, you know, I've played the game for 10 years now. You know, previous to AFLW, I was doing it for free. I'm sure that does play a big part of it, but really injuries are going to happen. I know someone that was walking their dog and they did an ACL because a dog ran in front of her and
wasn't
did it that
with
way.
Charlie Curnow by any chance?
No, I don't think so.
But Emma, I think when you had your CBA negotiations and obviously that got pretty tense and there was a few divisions there, and it really wasn't so much about the money, was it? It was largely about conditions and the way you looked at as a league in itself.
Oh, absolutely. I think from an outside perspective, everyone thought it was about the money, but it was more about the season length, when pre-season is going to start, so we actually have a start time, but also the length of pre-season, because 9 weeks isn't enough for us to work out our game plan.
Was it 1 year?
It's a three-year deal now.
But can you revise it in terms of the pre-season for next year?
Not so much the pre-season. There are parts that we can sort of revise. So like budgeting in terms of the food that we get after trainings and stuff like that. But in terms of pre-season and season length, that's pretty much set in concrete.
Moving on to the actual season this year, what's been the impact of the new teams coming in as far as on the field? Have you noticed talent, quality, skill?
It's hard as a player because you just go through the motions and you don't necessarily notice looking in. But I think we've seen a lot of games that are blowouts. I know particularly in my conference, the last sort of 2-3 games, we've been able to beat teams quite easily, as opposed to last year, we had a lot of hard games. But in saying that, we're having more girls play at the highest level. So they're going to have access to better coaching, better resources. So their skill level is going to be better. In terms of the product, I think it's probably stagnated a little bit, and it will probably continue to stagnate until the league can settle. And I'm not sure when the AFL wants to introduce the next four teams. I think they're looking in the next 3 or 4 years.
How would you do it?
I think you've just got to let it settle for, I reckon, the next 5 years. I don't think the talent that's coming through is strong enough to really
keep up with expansion.
So you're Hawthorne and Essendon, who are looking for clarity on when they're going to get a team, you wouldn't have them for the next 5 years?
No.
No, I mean, they didn't put their hand up the first year. And sorry, but really, it's in the interest of the league now. And every woman I have spoken to who plays is adamant that it has just got to be given some time to breathe. Tell me about Richmond. So they came in, came into the season with a bang, certainly in terms of recruitment and big names like Sabrina Frederick and Katie Brennan. Why have they been so disappointing? Or does that not surprise you?
Oh, it probably doesn't surprise me too much. It's really hard to start a new team and expect to perform with the length of the preseason. The players are just starting to get to know each other, let alone get to know each other, how they play on the field. So it is a difficult thing. But also they've been struck with a lot of injuries. I think going into this round against St Kilda, they're having to rely on some of their train-on players. So we've got a squad of 30, but we also have train-on players who, in case we've got too many injuries, they have to play instead of. So it's hard, and, you know, a lot of the clubs still rely on their big stars to win them games. And unfortunately for Richmond, you know, Katie Brennan's still dealing with her concussion, and that's a big out for them. But I think for Richmond and West Coast, it's the injuries that have prevented them from potentially reaching their full potential. But it's just the reality of the competition is the talent's not there. And unfortunately, they probably didn't get the draft picks that other clubs, say like a Western Bulldogs, did. Well,
they'll get a good draft pick.
There's been a bit of a bitter spat at the Bulldogs, hasn't there, with the Libby Birch comments from the former coach. Did that surprise you?
I was surprised that Libby made those comments post game. I felt that Libby was well looked after at the Bulldogs, but obviously she had a different opinion. Obviously, I was there for 2 years, and I never really had much of an issue at the club. I think it was a well run organisation, but I think for Libby, she just felt a little bit out of place and wanted to feel a little bit more valued at a club like Melbourne. And I think she's been able to find that place.
Was there sort of a realisation through the competition after even the Stacey Livingston comments with Taylor Harris that what you say is actually going to get picked up and reported now, that maybe you were talking a bit more freely previously? And I thought it was a good thing. Personally, I thought it was good to hear a player say what they thought. But to see the response to it?
Yeah, I think it's a great thing. We as female athletes, we feel like we're quite authentic, and we don't have those standard cliched responses to things. And I think with Stacey's comments, it gave us a little insight of how she was going to try to tackle or take down Harris. And she did a good job.
She's been successful with it.
Yeah. Coach had obviously said to her during the week.
Correct.
I thought it was fantastic.
So nice.
I thought it was it was like, not AFLW coming of age, but to see a Carlton Collingwood too, just made it better.
And I hope they face each other again in the finals series, because how great's that going to be?
It was one of the most enjoyable games too. And I thought it summed up a lot of where the game was at, where I thought the skill was really good and really it bounced end to end and was clean and open. But the scoring was difficult because of the idea of having to get close enough to goal to kick a goal. And that's I think, one of the structural problems for the competition is getting the scoring is the depth of kick and being close to goal to score. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do agree. And I think the AFL is looking at the size of the ground and what the standard size should be. And we look at Icon Park and that ground's enormous. So there's so much space for us to play, which for someone like me who loves to run and carry the ball, it's great. But in terms of the average length of kicks, it's too far. It's going to take 4 to 5 kicks to get to the other end, as opposed to if we played on a smaller ground. We played at North Hobart Oval on the weekend, perfect size ground for women's footy, and we're able to score more freely.
What did you think? Were you surprised at Collingwood's improvement this year?
I wasn't really. They had quite a talented list. They had Chloe Malloy, who's an outstanding player, missed last season because of an ankle injury. So having her back in, plus having Bree Davies' leadership and physicality around the ball has certainly aided them. They've also got a new coach, so just brings a fresh new element to the club. And you know, Jamie Lambert's having her best year. I've always said that she could be the best player in the competition. It's probably just more about her attitude and work rate. And I think she's taken another step, and Davey's probably helped her become that good player that she is.
Who wins it from here, Caro?
Oh, gee, that's...
North. Fremantle's
yeah,
doing
Caro,
well.
Who's going to win?
No, look, everyone, from what I've seen, I think North Melbourne. I'll tip North.
I want to say Collingwood, but no. But I actually think North had the best team going into the season, and I think how many games have you only lost?
We've just lost one game.
And I'll go North.
Fremantle's doing well, but you know, present company insists I go with North.
Oh no, it doesn't.
Coming back with quick questions.
Emma can take it.
That's right.
If you like what you're hearing, let us know about it. Head to iTunes, rate, review, and subscribe.
Oh, Pendles goes for a torp, and he's given it plenty. Watch out, Dusty's at the back. It didn't quite arrive. Boak, they line up again. Quick snap from Cameron. It's a good snap, and the Vicks are still coming.
Well, welcome back. Quick questions and straight into it. Did the match for bushfire relief show that bringing back State of Origin would be a viable option, Jake?
No, basically. The game was like a practice game. The ball hardly touched the ground. The intensity was actually low. I loved some of the skills, but great for the bushfires, but no.
No.
No, wouldn't persist with it.
The coaches just won't allow it. And I think it was, if there's a fantastic, incredible cause like we had, I mean, a tragic cause, then fantastic that it raised all the money, but no.
Emma?
I would say no as well. It was very free-flowing, but there wasn't a lot of defence in there, no hard tackles.
And please change the Allies jumper. What a terrible jumper that was.
Oh, they came in for a press conference. They looked like linesmen and ball boys.
It wasn't a nice uniform, the shorts.
Nah,
not terrible. Good.
I don't think that's the reason not to play it. But I think that quite like the skill level. I like watching a game just played where it was all skill and, you know, oh well. Which player are you most looking forward to seeing in action at their new club?
I'll kick it off. I reckon Hill at St Kilda. They're so excited about him. And I think he's going to have a fantastic year.
Tim Kelly, I think. Yep. He's such a good player, and in West Coast, already strong midfield.
Josh Bruce at the Bulldogs, not as good a player, not as big name a player, but that forward line, if that clicks with Aaron Norton and him, then they'll go close.
Yeah, I want to see Jack Stephen at Geelong. I reckon just to get him back playing again, but get him back, you know, full season. Don't think it'll make the difference for them, but it'd be good to see him. Who is going to struggle this year, team-wise?
Melbourne, I reckon. I just don't feel confident that they'll turn it around. I like the captaincy decision. I like some of the pre-season soul-searching, but I just don't think they're going to make the eight, and I think their supporters are going to be disappointed.
So there's going to be ramifications if that happens, Caro. They've backed in the coach, and you know, there'll be a lot of pressure on a lot of people if that's...
There will be. They've thrown money at the problem, and we'll see whether it's money or culture that will win out, Jake.
So they fluked it a final, the finals. The
no, no, but I just think there are cultural issues there. A lot of players had fantastic seasons, and they had two great finals, but I just worry about some of the divisions at Melbourne.
Jake?
Adelaide Crows, I think, will struggle. They're in a rebuild, and they're not. They're going to sort of have a bit of a bottoming out year, I believe. So, they'll in the long term they'll turn it around. They're a powerful club, but they're going to have to go through a little bit of pain.
Yeah, Adelaide Crows for me too.
Well, I'm going to go two. I'm going to go the Blues, who I don't think are going to rise much. I can't see where the improvement comes from, and I think the Swans are going to struggle. I think the Swans are going down the ladder. Who is going to be the best player in the competition by the end of the year? And a sub-question for you, Emma. Who will win the AFLW Best and Fairest? So you can start off.
Yeah, so I'll go with Patrick Cripps for me. And AFLW medal, Jamie Lambert. She's in sensational form at the moment.
Grips, but please, Carlton, protect him, because I don't want to see him going out on the field looking like the mummy, you know, with bandages everywhere and getting belted every week.
The last month of the year, last year he was almost getting to that point, wasn't he?
Yes.
Oh, he was unbelievable, Cripps. I tell you who I think is going to have a big jump, and that's Duzma at Port Adelaide. I like him.
You love Port Adelaide.
I'm sure you will see a bit of the Arrow this year.
You're having a chat to Ken, haven't you? The Arrow.
Caro and Kenny.
Look, it's so difficult to say. I mean, you would think that Tom Lynch, a year in, at the peak of his powers, could do, and talking about the Richmond Tom Lynch, could do anything as well. I mean, he was really starting to warm up in the last half of the year.
There's a couple of players it could be. Dugowie could be, but won't be, I don't think. Dustin Martin has been and probably, him and Cripps, yeah. The other one that I think won't be the best player in the competition, but will be in the conversation of the best 10 or 15, is it will be Tim English.
We've mentioned Fife, by the way. Just won a second Brownlow.
Yeah, good player.
Lucky to win the Brownlow.
Agree.
Had a great season, but lucky to win it.
Question without notice. Extra question without notice. Very quick question. Will Gary Ablett play VFL footy this year?
Oh, gee, no.
Jake? No, rested. You'll get rested.
Yeah, they'll say rested for sure.
He won't play seniors, but he won't play VFL.
Nobody puts baby in the corner. It doesn't happen.
You don't run Kingston Town in a welter midweek.
Well, no, but if you're out, it's a stud. That's all we have time for this week. Thanks to Emma for your very impressive.
You're welcome.
Coming up first.
I reckon you'll be back, Emma.
Yeah. And to you and Jake. Jake,
good maiden.
And Carol, of course.
Good maiden. Yeah. Nice to see you, Emma. Great to see you both again, Jake and Gleese.
And thanks to Channel 7 and Fox Footy for the audio we've used in this episode. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so via email at the address realfootypod@theage.com.au or give us a call on 03 8667 1235. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.